Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast. Monday, October 3rd, episode 9, NFL week 4 nearly complete. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined in just a matter of seconds by my co-host and esteemed colleague, Payne Insider, who you can find on Twitter at Payne Insider, and you can find me on Twitter as well at Todd Furman. Payne, we normally have a Monday routine, and of course, we'll get to it where we look back at the games we saw. We'll preview upcoming games for Week 5. More importantly, we'll break down the Monday Night Football matchup between the Giants and Vikings. But I got an interesting email over the weekend, and so I want to come a little bit out of character. One of our loyal listeners shot me a note and goes, you know what? You and Payne spend so much time talking about games, breaking them down. We want to know what it's like for you guys on a typical game day. So Payne, I'm going to let you lead off and walk us through what game day at the Payne Manor looks like during the NFL season.
It's not fun. It's not what everyone is envisioning. I'm not going to the sports bar eating hot wings and doing all that fun stuff. I usually set my alarm the same time every single day. 7:23 a.m. I usually wake up much before that, but that's the last thing I do. Crawl out of bed, quick shower, and then I get into it. Fire up the computer, get the, you know, five screens going, the TV above, and all that good stuff. So I am locked and loaded in front of the computer very early on. It's not glamorous. It's not fun. It's not all it's cracked up to be. I would love to be at the bar, you know, pounding some drinks with the buddies.
Is there a reason the alarm clock is set for 7:23 rather than, say, 7:25 or 7:20 like normal individuals, so you prefer to use five-minute increments?
Same reason anytime I have a drink, it's got seven ice cubes in it. I mean, there's some quirky things that I do, potentially for some good luck. I can tell you during the Syracuse Final Four run in March Madness, sat in the same spot in the chair every single game.
And at least people want to say that sports bettors aren't superstitious. You're getting a full dose of what things look like now for some of the best in the business. So I always find it interesting, Payne, because people think, you know, they sensationalize a lot of what goes on. They think you're out and about, you know, having a good time. But a lot of this, you become a glorified data scientist. You're watching games, constantly digging into the numbers, taking phone calls, doing and answering media obligations, that being successful in this business long-term isn't something where you just kind of flip a switch and turn the switch off when it's over. It truly becomes a lifestyle if you want to dedicate yourself to being a professional bettor.
Yeah, it's much, much different for me, and we kind of joke about this all the time. I'm not a media guy. I, you know, delegate my I guess, you know, my segments on certain days. You can't get me on game day. Like, that's just a strict rule I have. There's no media on game day, none whatsoever. Just a lot of phone calls coming in back and forth, a lot of messages over some private, secure network connections with a lot of bettors, things of that nature. So it's nonstop every 2 seconds. And I know we're texting every, you know, few minutes about games. So it's pretty an interesting setup. But yeah, it's fun for me, obviously, but I think the people listening is, you know, we're not hanging out with our buddies. We're not, you know, pounding back drinks. The one thing I do like to do after a winning day is just wind down with a cocktail for the primetime game.
All right, well, that's a step in the right direction. It shows there is a slight human element to you, despite the more or less robotic approach that we all have to take. And as always, Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online. Encourage folks who haven't been to that website, check it out. Great bonuses available there for new time customers. Use the promo code 75BTB, or if you're looking to reload, 50BTB. And Payne, for folks that want to support the podcast, what's the best way for them to do that or see a lot of our great work?
Just go over to the fancy new website, bettheboardpodcast.com. Every single podcast we do is archived there. We also have some great content going up. Todd wrote an article that will be going up this week. And then, of course, the swag, the gambling gear we have there. 6 editions of some t-shirts that you can purchase. And we've had a lot of great support there. But just purchase a t-shirt, It's $29-$25. It lets us know that you know, you really support us, you like what we're providing for free, and it's kind of just a big thank you to us. So lots of great gambling gear there as well.
And the most important part about purchasing this first batch of t-shirts, Payne, is that people have already sent in suggestions for what they want our new t-shirts to look like. And until we sell out of the current inventory, we need to try and get those things moving off the shelves a little bit, and we'll have some new fresh gear as well. Let's get down to brass tacks, though. People want to know what we saw over the weekend to kind of recap week four thus far, at least through the first few games. Best win of the weekend, in your opinion?
I think it's obvious. I think you have to go Atlanta Falcons. They have to be mentioned here. And I think mostly because of the quick turnaround. They played Monday night on the road. I know not a lot of travel, but this was a team that I was really hesitant on. Wise guys hated them coming into the season. They start 2-1. The schedule was a little bit meh, so I wasn't quite sure on them. And then you look at who they faced defensively. 21st, 29th, and 30th most efficient defenses, but they saw Carolina, yes, issues in the secondary, but they were sixth overall in efficiency to that point. And Julio Jones, you know, we talked about this a little bit, sixth player in NFL history to have 300 yards receiving. And the big thing when you think about this is he had 9 yards, over 9 yards, per route run in that game, meaning literally every time he left the line of scrimmage, went out for a pass, that offense was gaining 9 yards. It was 40% better than the next closest receiver. So that was ridiculous. Matt Ryan, you know, he looked poised in the pocket for the first time. And I know, I mean, you have mentioned this many times. He started to look a little old. Was he regressing the last few years? He does have a defensive coach. So a lot of dink and dunk has been going on, but not this week. He really opened it up, 16 passes down the field, and Julio Jones was the beneficiary of many of those.
Will be very interesting to see if that Atlanta Falcons offense looks even close to what it has over the last 3 weeks when they make a trip out to Denver for next Sunday's game. Honorable mentions, though, for best effort. Payne, thoughts on the Steelers, who clearly bounced back on Sunday Night Football against the Kansas City Chiefs. And maybe a game that surprised a lot of folks, not if you were paying attention to line movement all Sunday morning. Buffalo beating the Patriots using their defense to shut out the Pats for the first time at home since 1993.
Yeah, I think the Steelers, it's another obvious one, that standalone primetime spot. And I kind of wanted to talk about that because of the move we saw. I know math guys loved the Chiefs. Pittsburgh came into week three the worst team in the NFL in net yardage. The Chiefs, on the other hand, came into the week number two in overall efficiency. So what's not to love if you're a math guy? But I can tell you right now, there is a ceiling on the Chiefs with Alex Smith. Yes, very nice quarterback. If you're the Cleveland Browns, you'd love to have Alex Smith, but there is a clear, clear ceiling with Alex Smith. There's no way on any planet, in any world, that this is the number two team in any metric. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think the one thing to be cognizant of here is in the NFL and in most sports, we talk about this in college basketball all the time, the 25-5 rule. We're in a 30-game college basketball season. You're going to play 20 games true to who you are, five above that, five well below. I think in the NFL, 16 games, you probably call it the 10-3-3 rule, where, again, 10 games true to really who you are, your power number, three games well above that, three games well below. And in back-to-back weeks, we saw the Steelers, you know, against Philadelphia, a horrible performance this week, probably much better than who they are. But you get Marcus Wheaton back. He was back last week, but, you know, he was a shell of himself. You get Le'Veon Bell back. The offense has changed dramatically. And this is a team that we really liked with Super Bowl futures. And I think they're here to stay now.
Yeah, pretty funny how people were so down in the Steelers after seeing them get absolutely boat raced in Philadelphia last week. They bounced back, and all seems to be well in the Steel City with the Jets coming to town. For best performances, we obviously have teams that were on the other end of the spectrum. When we look at sides that had the worst loss of the weekend, I think I have an idea where you're going to start, but I don't want to steal your thunder.
It's got to be Arizona. It has to be.
That's exactly where I thought you were going. I just didn't know if you wanted to try and take something away from the Falcons' victory with Carolina, but I'm going to let you dissect currently with what's wrong in the desert.
Listen, you called me robotic. I might as well live up to that, right? It's Bruce Arians, and I love the guy. I have a man crush on him, but so far this season, when you watch things, he's become your high school buddy that runs four wide go routes in Madden and just, like, chucks it deep every single time. they got to change that up. And I think the Patriots and Bill Belichick have kind of been in their head, and it's that one loss equated to more because everyone is using that Bill Belichick game plan and doing so successfully. Carson Palmer looks just old and decrepit. I had question marks about this offensive line coming into the season, so they're not helping Palmer. And this is really wild. We know the Rams front four is good, but they got pressure on Carson Palmer on 54% of his dropbacks this week. No wonder he is injured and questionable for next week.
All right. So we had good performances, we had bad performances, but what was the one thing that surprised you the most from all the football that you watched on Sunday?
I think Jameis Winston. And, you know, obviously FSU guy, but just pitiful. The slow starts continue. Whether that's an FSU thing, it appears as such. Whether it's a Jameis Winston thing, I don't know. Just forcing balls into places that aren't open. He looks uncomfortable. Even when the line gave him time this week, he was bad. He was actually worse when he had time this week as opposed to when he was being pressured. Right now, you look at this, there is a regression. He's 23rd in efficiency out of 34 qualifying QBs. He has faced some tough defenses, no doubt. Arizona, Denver, the Rams. But right now, 8 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. You just cannot have a 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio.
Two performances I want to ask you about kind of in the same vein. We look at the Chargers. For the third time in 4 games this season, they relinquish a lead in the final 2 minutes. And then when we look at the Oakland Raiders, we thought this could be a dangerous spot for them traveling east for the second straight week. Were there any major takeaways from two teams that'll meet next week, which appear to be trending in opposite directions in the AFC West?
It's tough. I don't know what to say about the Chargers. I'm just really sad and kind of disappointed because this is a team we had such high hopes for, and you get bitten by the injury bug again. It just seems like something in the water in San Diego that makes everybody so soft out there. I really don't know what's going on there. Everyone's injured every single year. You have to feel for Philip Rivers, but again, blowing fourth quarter leads, doing it at home to the Saints with no defense. So this is a team that could really be 4-0. They're going to have to internally somehow turn the tide and not turn this season into a lost cause. For Oakland, huge come from behind win, and it's the NFL. So you have 3 wins. That's awesome. And the one thing that I want to turn this into a positive is it's a young team. Maybe the positive here is they're figuring out how to win. That's something veteran teams do. Again, they're not looking very impressive, but they're winning games and they're a young team. So maybe that's the tip in the cap for them. They're figuring out how to win as a young team.
All right. And so through 4 weeks, we're essentially at what we'll call the quarter pole of the NFL. Most of the league has played 4 games. The Packers and Eagles have only played 3. And I guess for all intents and purposes, the Giants and Vikings have only played 3, since they'll go later tonight on a game which we'll cover in greater detail provided by the American Gaming Association as our big game breakdown. If I ask you to fill in the blanks on a couple of these statements, Payne, you're going to have to help me out. The best team in the NFL through 4 weeks is blank.
This is easy. This is an actual question.
This is an actual question. I need to lob you softball so you can sit there dead red waiting for a fastball to come right down the pipe.
Okay, this is like Tim Tebow in the like Intercontinental Practice League hitting a home run in the first at bat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the instructional league. You know where the ball is going to be going. You can isolate it on the size of a teacup, and boom, I'm going to throw it right down the dish for you to park over the right field wall.
The New England Patriots.
What do we make of the Patriots? We know Tom Brady's getting back in the fold. We know they're coming off of this embarrassing performance against Buffalo. Do we think there's going to be an adjustment with Tom to try and get acclimated to the offense? And of course, we'll cover the game against the Browns in greater detail on Thursday. Why don't I get your thoughts there on that particular matchup?
Well, I think Brady in general, he's out there and he's determined. We've seen what this team does, what he does when there's turmoil, when the league basically, you know, slaps them on the wrist. They take the us against the world mentality. The guy was videotaped out there. He's been practicing. He's chewing on glass. I mean, he's going to come back focused more than ever. This is kind of their last hoorah. And when you win 3 out of 4 games and the quarterbacks that they've had, I think it's been very, very impressive. Now, I know what Buffalo kind of did to them, but there's a reason that line took the move it did. Brissett was injured. I don't think Brissett plays on a normal week if there is another capable quarterback. Shocked they didn't pick someone up that knew the system off the waiver wire or someone they had in camp or moved someone up from the practice squad. So that was, to me, a real throwaway type game. So I took nothing from it. So New England, head and shoulders above the rest of the NFL right now.
All right, we're going to the other end of the spectrum then. Worst team in the NFL through the first 4 weeks is blank, and you can't use the Cleveland Browns, who sit at 0-4.
It was going to be the Cleveland Browns, but I was going to give them a praise because they are just playing their balls off for Hugh Jackson. I mean,
they just don't have a lot of talent. There's just no talent on that roster.
No talent, but there has been zero quit. Everyone is locked in. Everyone is mentally and emotionally in that game. So you have to just tip your cap to Hugh Jackson, because right now the game plans he's coming up with absolutely coach circles around Adam Gase 2 weeks ago, did it again with Gruden, gave that team a real opportunity to win on the road back-to-back weeks. The game plans are just masterful when he gets talent there, and hopefully he does. Hopefully this Moneyball approach works and they're able to pick up some talent. He's going to be very good there. I think there's some progress ahead for Cleveland, but I think when I look at things, and this is so hard for me because I'm too close to the situation, and when you look at some of their numbers, like the Miami Dolphins right now, like seventh in the NFL in net yards per play. They are a positive half a yard per play in seventh in the NFL in that category, but they are just so bad right now. They're just not very deep. Adam Gase still learning some things. They don't have a ground game. They can't stop the run. And I know we're in this day and age where you have to pass, and it's, you know, available out there. If you know, efficiency metrics, when you look at those, passing equates to four times more success than running the ball. But in this league, you have to be able to control the game, and they can't do that by running or stopping the run. This team is very bad. The saving grace here is if internally you look at the Dolphins and you hear what they're saying, the season starts this week. The schedule starts to soften a little bit. We know the new system being provided. You talk to a lot of NFL executives. It usually takes about a good 10 games to implement your system, get guys accustomed to systems. Ryan Tannehill's fifth system in as many years. So that's the one thing. But right now at this very second, this Dolphins team is just piss poor.
And now time to hand out a little bit of premature hardware. MVP and Coach of the Year through 4 weeks.
Coach of the Year has to be Bill Belichick. I think when you look at maybe honorable mention, not from a head coaching perspective, you know, Doug Peterson's been awesome, so you can kind of give him honorable mention, but Jim Schwartz has been freaking awesome. He'll get a head coaching job again in this offseason. MVP, I'm a little different, and I won't be robotic on this one. I think everybody...
You really took that robotic comment to heart over there.
Yeah,
you're playing with a chip on your shoulder this Monday morning. I like it.
Absolutely. I think the one thing here is everyone, we're now in this fantasy day and age where we're thinking, you know, wide receivers and quarterbacks and running backs. I think right now the best player in the league, the most valuable player in this league, it's not close. It's Aaron Donald. This Rams defensive line, and specifically him, he is just breaking every player grading chart known to mankind right now. He is just light years above everybody. He's getting to the quarterback from the interior line, which usually isn't what an interior lineman is asked to do. He's taking on double teams, providing one-on-one opportunities for the rest of that defensive line, and that is the reason they're 3-1, and it looks like Mr. 7-9 Jeff Fisher might not be 7-9 this year.
Hard Knocks jinx be damned. The Rams are playing for keeps. Amazing what happens to a team once they get out of St. Louis and they start to perform to more Hollywood-level standards. You want to follow Payne on Twitter? You can do so at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman. Of course, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod and visit our website, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Payne, when we look at some of the games, and obviously there are going to be injury concerns facing Carolina for their Monday night game against Tampa, so don't want to get into that game too much. Carson Palmer, on a short week, probably not going to be making the start in San Francisco, where Arizona would have been a 5.5-6 point favorite if the game been played last weekend. Most likely looking at Arizona, real modest road favorites, with Drew Stanton getting the nod there. So let's start with games on Sundays that we know about. Houston and Minnesota. Yes, the Vikings have to play tonight, but you've already seen the market jump from Minnesota, a 4-point favorite playing host to the Texans, out to 6. Houston's performance on Sunday, that disappointing that the market should react 2 points without Minnesota even playing a game?
Ugh, this team's very weird right now. Brock Osweiler started out pretty hot, but just kind of fizzled down the stretch after that hot first quarter. So this Houston team, I don't think anybody likes that division. I think that's the other thing here. But Houston 3-1. We kind of don't know what Minnesota is, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on in terms of their yards per play metrics. But right now, Houston for me is a sell team in the market. Again, very happy with being 3-1. I think they'll probably win that division. But right now, I think they're a fade team in the market.
Interesting. And you, as you mentioned, talk about the Vikings, some of their advanced metrics, which we'll cover in their game against the Giants. Redskins at the Ravens, a battle on the Beltway in the nation's capital. The Ravens, 5-point favorites going into last week, and I don't think they played poorly. They finally encountered a living, breathing offense in the Oakland Raiders, but you see the market react a little bit, not through a massively key number of 4, but Baltimore right now a 3.5-point favorite playing host to the Redskins at BetOnline, total there 46.5.
Yeah, we saw some money come in on Oakland, not only the public, but sharp last week. Baltimore played pretty well last week. They should have probably won that game, let up the last second drive. But for this week, right now, I think we'll probably see a little bounce back again. I think the key to understanding the market as we talk about this on Monday, 7 a.m. Vegas time, is there are going to be a lot of setup positions going on at this point in time. It's very easy to manipulate the market with lower limits. Guys that have respect can do it very cheaply. And then all of a sudden, Friday, those limits increase. Game day, those limits increase. And they've been set up perfectly for the number they really want.
This game, for me, gets to be fascinating on a number of levels. You have Jim Schwartz going home to Detroit. You have a team that is the talk of the town right now in Philadelphia, coming off a bye at 3-0. The Detroit Lions couldn't have looked worse going into Soldier Field, losing to the Bears as 3-point road favorites. The Lions, 1-point favorites on a look-ahead number coming into this matchup. Now 2.5-point home underdogs. Are we talking about a similar situation developing here on Sunday that we saw in Tampa and Denver, where you're going to get 80-90% of the tickets being punched on one side and the books praying for dear life, they get a dog with a little bit of bite?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we've looked at is the potential for Detroit playing a little bit better at home, and I'm pretty certain this is a game that we'll talk about on Thursday. I would think this gets to 3 at some point, so if you like Detroit, I would wait a little bit. We'll talk about Jim Bob Cooter more on Thursday. We'll talk about how Matthew Stafford has looked under Jim Bob Cooter. This was really Stafford's first horrific game since they made the switch in the bye week last year. So this is an interesting game. I know we'll cover this in full detail on Thursday.
Bears-Colts, interesting for a number of reasons, given that Indianapolis has the unenviable role of playing across the pond in London and then coming back home to play a home game. You look at teams in the past, typically they're given a bye week, so not quite sure the scheduling quirk here. Indy was a 6.5-point favorite on the look-ahead number. Now you're looking at the Colts as a 4.5-point chalk. How do we think Indianapolis handles the time zone differences but playing a very manageable foe in their own building?
Well, this is something that they wanted, okay? So I've talked about this in the preview podcast. The NFL does make some concessions. They field requests. So teams at the beginning of the year are able to request some things that they would like with their schedule. We saw this with the Miami Dolphins. They requested 2 away games, weren't sure that their stadium would be completed in time. The Indianapolis Colts, a team that isn't very deep, a team that's suffered from a lot of injuries over the course of time, they requested a later bye week. So they said we don't need a bye after our London trip. So I believe this is the first team without a bye after the London trip. Chicago, on the other hand, I think we talked about this in great detail. Hoyer, what is he to the spread? Probably on a numbers perspective, just a half a point, maybe a full point downgrade from Jay Cutler. The thing here is, though, it becomes a bigger upgrade from the aspect of this team likes Brian Hoyer. Okay, they want to play for Brian Hoyer, and we saw that, and I think this is probably the first and last time we'll ever, you know, mention Brian Hoyer, but he was fantastic this past week. He was fantastic with pressure in his face this week. Actually, his 2 touchdowns came with pressure in his face. He had nearly 130 quarterback rating when pressure got to him, so it was a lot of dink and dunk from Hoyer, but I think this is a team that a lot of sharp guys will start gravitating towards.
Is it safe to assume that John Fox will allow Brian Hoyer to remain his starting quarterback for the foreseeable future, even when Jay Cutler is done nursing this thumb ailment that's kept him sidelined each of the last 2 weeks?
I think the question becomes, if that he does decide to do that, what does that mean for Jay Cutler's future? And I think it's the obvious sign that they aren't going to want him back next year. The one thing, if you just want to rid yourself of Jay Cutler, that's perfectly fine. If you're looking for a quarterback to replace him or an upgrade at quarterback, you're going to have to pay money for that. And when you look at Jay Cutler's contract for next year, I believe it's only $12.5 million. And when you put that in perspective of, you know, Ryan Tannehill making 19, Jay Cutler becomes a bargain at that point. But does the locker room hate him? Do the guys hate him? Do the coaching staff not get along with him? And if that's the case, then you just got to get him out of town.
If you were looking to gamble on this podcast and looking for props, I don't think anyone out there of our loyal listenership would have ever thought that Jay Cutler and bargain would have gone in the same sentence coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what these quarterbacks are making right now, when you look at Brock Osweiler, what he's making right now, you kind of have to put your quarterbacks in tiers. And we talked again about you have solutions, you have problems, and then you have guys that are kind of even keel. And those guys that are even keel, the guys that aren't necessarily going to contribute to wins but not necessarily losses, that middle tier of quarterbacks, those guys right now are getting paid $18 million a season. That's what the going rate is. And Jay Cutler, he might be on the bottom of that tier, but at $12.5 million next year, like, it's not a horrible deal.
Yeah, not a bad gig if you can get it. And quarterbacks who I wouldn't put on that bottom tier will lock horns Sunday in Oakland, the Chargers on the road at the Raiders. And when you look at this particular number, Payne, Oakland would have been a three-point favorite on a look-ahead number. Number has ballooned out to 4.5 at BetOnline. We've talked about both of these teams, how disappointing the Chargers have been in closing out their opponents, how Oakland may finally be learning how to win. Well, we saw the Raiders installed as a 4.5-point favorite once this season. Loss doesn't look so bad now, but they let an opportunity slip through their fingers against the Falcons. Do we take a wait-and-see approach on Oakland when they're installed as a favorite, especially by more than a field goal?
Man, if this was a 3.5-quarter game, I might have my largest bet ever on the San Diego Chargers, but that's not the case here. I'm going to play the wait-and-see approach, see how high this gets. Obviously, familiarity, close proximity, you know, the battle of California, so to speak. So it'll be an interesting game here. I think we'll let this get as high as humanly possible and then try to dissect what we're going to do with it.
Sounds good, and that's what we have the Thursday podcast for, and it's the reason you should be subscribed to the Bet the Board podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, and checking out the website regularly. More importantly, sign up for the newsletter that is available. You'll be the first to listen to the podcast both on Mondays and Thursdays when they go live. And Payne, as is the Monday tradition around these fine parts, a little movie review time. And last week we elected to see Denzel Washington play the role of vigilante and savior for the people. And I don't even remember the name of the small town. It tells you how much attention I paid in Magnificent Seven. And before you break this down, though, are you a fan of Western movies? Did you ever get into watching John Wayne or some of the other stuff from the 50s and 60s? Or I get the feeling that wasn't your go-to genre.
It wasn't, but growing up, it was my dad. So I got, you know, the full range of The Outlaw with Josie Wales, you know, those kind of things. So I didn't see the original Magnificent Seven. We touched on that. But The Outlaw with Josie Wales must have been played like once a week in my household.
Clint Eastwood's finer work there. You have to respect The Outlaw of Josie Wales.
Absolutely. Now, for me, and this is going to sound pretty stupid, but, you know, Django Unchained, liked it. I have not seen The Hateful Eight yet. I hear it's very good. Probably something I might be able to do in the summertime, have it on Apple TV, purchased it, just have not seen it yet. So maybe I get into that a little bit. But, you know, not a huge Western guy, but I did enjoy this one.
I think the movie was entertaining, and I know we're not here to break things down and talk about symbolism and all the other stuff that goes into making these movies. One thing with this Magnificent Seven that I thought was interesting, Payne, in the original movie that came out, I think, in the 50s or 60s, it's a Mexican town that's taken apart by bandidos, and they go up to the States to find American mercenaries. So you don't have that taking place in this movie. It's Americans and Americans, but it does become a, I don't know if it's criticism or myth-busting, basically of a people who are incapable of taking care of themselves. So they go out there and they bring in Denzel and his band of justice, so to speak. But it's a lot like this podcast. I can't take care of myself, so I lean on you to take care of me and get me through the darkest times.
Yeah.
See, yeah. So you get, you know, a free pass there. It's like you're doing charity work every Monday and Thursday morning for us. Movie this week, I wasn't sure what you had picked out for us.
I think charity work sounds about right. I agree with that movie, though. It was good, worth the watch, entertaining. It was obviously action-packed, not a ton of plot, not a lot of substance. Decent little message there, portraying togetherness of all races and all kinds. So I did like it. I would see it. This week, not a ton of stuff. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking Deepwater Horizon. I mean, when Mark Wahlberg graces the silver screen, I feel like we have an obligation on this podcast to go out there. Debated Masterminds, I didn't really think that was going to be in our wheelhouse. But like always, I'm open to suggestions. And I know you're getting nervous because a couple of the movies that are coming out soon, I know we've waited for The Accountant, but Girl on a Train, Inferno with Tom Hanks. I mean, these are all movies based on books that I've actually read. So that opens a Pandora's box where I'm not sure what your comfort level is going to be.
We can go with Deepwater Horizon. Nothing like a little water movie. I think The Accountant's a definite. We're definitely watching that, and we can dive into your book movies. I'm not going to read the book beforehand, but I will definitely...
Of course, I wouldn't expect you to read the book. Come on, yes. Now, I know better.
Yes, these winners don't pick themselves. I think that might be a good t-shirt.
I think that, and along with the first half under that keeps coming in that people really want to try and see, put on all sorts of paraphernalia, which leads us, more importantly, to the big game breakdown of the Vikings playing host to the Giants. Right now, you're looking at the Vikings, a 4-point favorite at BetOnline, total on this game, 42.5. And as it is each and every Monday and Thursday, those games brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out all their work they're doing for legalization of sports gambling at AmericanGaming.org or follow them on Twitter at AmerGamingASSN for all sorts of real-time updates. Would also encourage you to sign up for their newsletter. Plenty of great content for those folks interested in things taking place in the industry, because it is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. You can sign up for those updates at AmericanGaming.org/about/contact. And Payne, you foreshadow a little bit the Vikings metrics and what they suggested about this football team. We saw them only hang 200 yards last week against the Carolina defense that had no answer for the Atlanta Falcons. Are we a little bit surprised the Vikings are this heavy a favorite against a Giants team who a lot of people thought was going to be capable of big things but stubbed their toe a bit last weekend at home against the Redskins?
Well, I think the big question here is, and you have to remove some of the static, some of the numbers. So when you look at the Vikings right now, offensively 4.6 yards per play. Sean Hill, week one, you kind of got to throw that out a little bit. The Vikings D has kind of been the calling card, 4.4 yards per play. So they're a net plus 0.2 yards per play. And I think this is why this line won't get out of hand. You're going to see a lot of those math guys come in on the Giants. A net positive 1.3 yards per play. It was number one in the NFL coming into this week. The Falcons surpassed them with their performance yesterday. So I think this game can only peak so high. The one thing that makes me a little nervous about the Giants at this point is this Minnesota Vikings home field advantage. It's right up there right now with the best in all of football. And I think, you know, you're trending towards a 3.5. So this current line at 4 says that there's about a half point differential between these teams. Not so certain that's the case.
What do we feel about the matchup these two teams played last year? A game that the Vikings clearly dominated the Giants, took them to the woodshed and then some in a 49-17 victory. Was there anything you saw that week that can be applied to this game, or because you've seen so much change and reshuffling of personnel on both sides that you kind of go, nope, I'm going to throw that game out and I'm going to look at the sample size for what I've seen thus far from these teams?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really account anything that happened last year. Every game's its own entity. That being said, you know, Eli Manning makes me a little nervous. He makes me nervous when he has pressure, and we kind of joke around about this all the time. If you kind of envision a goldfish flopping out of its little bowl there, that's kind of Eli when he gets pressure and he starts to throw the ball here and throw the ball there. This guy is very erratic, and I just, you know, I hate to bash him. 2 Super Bowls, going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Has a great last name, but he tends to get a little bit awry at times, and these are the kinds of defenses that scare me. He doesn't always seem composed. There's going to be noise funneled into that stadium with the sound system that Minnesota has. The offensive line for the Giants isn't great, so that definitely concerns me. When we talk about that game last year, I know we played the first half under in that. It was 0-0 after the first quarter. It was well on its way. And then Eli happened with a pick six and another turnover, and it ended up just sneaking over on a field goal late in the first half. So that's what scares me a little bit about this game.
Well, you mentioned the total. What do we make of that number? Currently 43 at BetOnline. I have to imagine we're going to see some under money start to hit the market by the time kickoff rolls around.
Already hit the market. A lot of the sharp guys got that key number of 44. Right now it is the number one largest key numbers when it comes to totals, 44. So that was a big get. We've already seen under money come in on that. For us, right now it wasn't the best week. Monday night will determine if it's a winner for me. We already played this game. We went first half under 21.5. It's trending towards 21. I think the hook is you need it. Right now, that gives it that fourth scoring possession, so to speak, needed. Right now, when you look at how important that hook is, the average time per possession, roughly 2.62 minutes. When we try to kind of compute that a little bit, you just round it up a touch, 3 minutes. So when you talk about this first half total and what that hook means, you're essentially going to a 27-minute first half as opposed to a 30-minute first half, and that provides some value. Again, the key here is going to be the turnovers. Bradford does it a little bit. I would suspect some pressure from that defensive line. Eli, pressure really hurts him. But in terms of the game plan here, I think the under makes a lot of sense, and that is the way all the professional bettors have gone so far.
Does it concern you at all with the Giants? You mentioned their struggles to run the football, that we don't know who's going to be their bell cow, so to speak, coming out of the backfield, with Shane Vereen being lost for the season, albeit more of a third down role, and Rashad Jennings expected to miss today as well.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of secondary concerns for the Giants. You know, you have two safeties out, Eli Apple out, Rogers Cromartie. He did travel to Minnesota. He's questionable. Rashad Jennings, you did mention, he did travel. So it's truly, a game time decision there. Orleans Darkwa, more of your traditional ground and pound, first and second down back. He's on the practice squad for the Dolphins so a few years ago, so I'm kind of familiar with him. He can run the ball, and actually he might be their best first and second down back. Not having Vereen there certainly as a third down back, I think, kind of hinders the offense just a touch. I don't really like a side here in this game. There has been professional money on the Giants, though, no doubt. They took that five, but for me, nothing on the side. The total, again, we went first half under here. It's going to determine whether I have a winning week or a losing week. And when we state this, it's not a big position. And I know we talked about this a little bit because people were a little confused last Monday when we gave them the Falcons. We were on the Falcons. But when we talk about stance, when we talk about position, it means the size of the bet. So it's nothing big. It's a normal position for us.
Well, and I think that's one last thing I want to close on, because I know that we addressed it before. And people who operate under the mindset where professionals are always betting the same amount on every game or position, that's nowhere close to being the case. There's games where you feel you have an edge and it's worth a bet. You feel like there are games where you have a much more substantial edge. And obviously, as a result, that's where your bet size reflects exactly what you think is going to transpire. And you take full advantage of the numbers that are out there in the market when opportunity presents itself.
Absolutely. And I think this is the biggest thing. And a lot of people have asked this, and maybe I go into a little tangent, a little rant here, but I've always been a proponent of the phrase, and I'll probably butcher it, but, catch a fish for a man, he eats for a day. Teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime. And that's exactly what I think we're trying to do here with this podcast. It's not like any other. We're not trying to sell you anything here. I don't need to give out a best bet, a free pick on every single game.
That's not true. We are trying to sell t-shirts.
Absolutely, t-shirts. But I'm not trying to win a game so that you come to the website and purchase something. Like, that's the last thing on my mind. That's not really what we're trying to do here. I think we're trying to teach. And I'll be honest, the Jets lost. It was an absolutely horrific performance. But I can tell you it's about the process. And when you take three and Grande closes minus one, you're doing the right thing. You're giving people the best information you can. If someone else that I know out there can move a market 4 points, let me know. I'll try to listen to your podcast. There was a great tweet from a guy, and I'll give him a shout out right now. I'm looking at it. His handle is Rikes101. And he said, thanks for the total on tonight's game, referring to the Steelers game. And I think this is the biggest thing here. I'm never, ever going to advise someone to bet something that I have not bet. It's kind of, you know, like a taboo in this industry. A lot of people are giving out information they're not actually betting themselves. That's never going to happen with me. So on Thursday, the Jets +3 was the only game we bet at that point. I gave it out. It lost. It's going to happen. But if you listen to that podcast, I hear Drew Brees got his revenge. I hear the Bengals and the 49ers were a good teaser leg that cashed. I hear the over went over last night. So this is from a movie review here. White Men Can't Jump. This is my thing about the scene in the back of the car. You can hear Jimmy, but are you listening? So there's a difference between hearing and listening. And I think a lot of the loyal listeners kind of get what we're doing. They're listening. They're not just hearing.
And more importantly, hey, like you mentioned, you know, we'll tell you when we win, we'll tell you when we lose. Accountability in this business goes a long, long way. And for folks out there who think you need to be successful 70% of the time, you're clearly in the wrong industry. The best in the world strive to hit between 55 and 60%. If you're aiming for higher expectations than that, you may as well try and find yourself another hobby to keep you entertained all weekend long.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the biggest thing. We are going to lose. The best in the world are going to lose. 40 to 45% of the time. 40 to 45% of the time, you're going to be able to clog my timeline with you suck. And that's just the reality of it. And it's
They can clog your timeline with you suck anytime they want. Even when we win, listeners, you're welcome to clog Payne's timeline with you suck. So you have my blessing.
Gee, thanks. And I won't respond. I'll be the robot and won't respond.
Just looking out for you, but... It is Monday. Time to close up shop here on Bet the Board. Thanks to everyone for listening, as you always do on our Monday and Thursdays edition. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. But most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod and check out our website, bettheboardpodcast.com, for the best NFL betting advice you're going to find anywhere on the planet. Regardless of what you do with the Monday night game between the Giants and Vikings, best of luck, and we'll be right back with you here on this same channel come Thursday, previewing all of the electric Week 5 matchups.